Hello, everybody. On behalf of NLIT Africa and in conjunction with ESI Africa, I'd like to welcome you to today's session. I'm James Sherwood, a principal with RMI's Africa Energy Program, and I will be moderating today. So today we're going to talk about alternative business models for supplying power to customers in Africa, using a case study of Nigeria's first commercial undergrid mini-grid project as an example. The project provides stable electricity through a new sustainable economic and regulatory model, and it shows how utilities, private developers, and communities can work together for mutual benefit. Before I hand it over to our panelists, I have a few housekeeping items to cover about today's session. First of all, thank you to all of our sponsors and speakers who have been with us over the past few days. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do this, so thank you. A recording of this session will be available on demand after the live session on the Digital Energy Festival website, and it's accessible using the same link that you're currently on. Next, we'd love to hear from you during today's presentation. So you can send through questions utilizing the chat and question options on the NLIT Africa Connect platform. These are on the right-hand side of your screen and give you an opportunity to engage with speakers during the Q&A and dig deeper into what we're gonna be talking about. So without any further ado, I'd like to kick things off by playing a video that explains the case study that I mentioned a minute ago and a community called Mokoloki in Nigeria. And then we'll talk through it across the speakers and get into how that project came about, why it works, and what's going to happen next.
Welcome to Mokoloki, a growing rural community in Ondo State, Nigeria. In the past, residents in this grid-connected community could access power only for a few hours and only a couple of days per week. Rural communities like Mokoloki often have the ability to pay for power, but their economic growth is limited by the quality of their electricity from the grid and the cost of their electricity from fossil genset. We call these communities under the grid, and they are where undergrid mini-grids come in. Undergrid mini-grids are distributed energy resources, self-contained electricity system up to 1 megawatt in size that can supplement the main grid. Mokoloki partners with Nayo Tropical Technologies, Ibadan Electricity Distribution Company, and Rocky Mountain Institute to install Nigeria's first commercial undergrid mini-grid. The project has the potential to be replicated to provide reliable, sustainable, and affordable electricity to hundreds of undergrid Nigerian communities.
So yeah, to see one business in the way, you know, we eyes to mount to. So could I see where we are, or room we are, you know, look, yeah, I really look. That's it, could have a fair, you know.
Mokoloki community offered us a special opportunity to test technology we've been deploying in rural communities in a peri-urban location. Our clientele and customer base here have used electricity before, though inefficient and unreliable power. Over the months, we've offered 99% availability and applied our energy efficiency program, where we train people on energy saving techniques.
They are being served with electricity day and night, and it's very, very good for them. In fact, if you go to Mokoloki today, you see that a lot of commercial activities have started springing up in the town. And it's because electricity as the driver of the economy, power that powers the economy, that power has been given to them, and they are maximizing it.
There's no time that we will be in darkness. Anytime we want light, we see it and we enjoy it.
Hopefully that video was helpful. Always great to see how community members in particular are responding to these Kansas systems. So this was a really interesting project from an RMI perspective, and our role in the project, as you saw in the video, was really, you know, facilitating and working with our partners at IBDC and NIOTECH, who are both on this panel and can speak in more detail about how that project went. This is a really exciting project because it was truly the first of its kind of situation where a utility and a developer were working together to come up with a tripartite solution in a rural community like Mokolokee. And we feel it's a really, really scalable model. But first of all, I'd like to start with Toby Busari from IBDC. So Toby, could you say a little bit about what your involvement was with the project? And in particular, you know, I think a lot of folks, when they see a project like this, they kind of think, why would a utility want to be involved with this? So from your perspective at IBDC, share a little bit about how that came about and what the thought process was.
All right, thank you, James. Let me start by appreciating Lit Africa and ASI Africa for organizing this wonderful event. I'm Busari Tobi. I'm lead embedded generation and renewable energy at Ibadan Electricity Distribution Company. And as a lead embedded generation and renewable energy expert at IBDC, I was in charge of coordinating a team of professionals, given technical, commercial, financial and regulatory support to all engagements geared towards, you know, the development of the Mokolokee project. This, I believe, is the beginning of our thinking that the less we depend on the main grid, the better for our service delivery. So this is just the beginning of our plan to better serve the underserved areas, you know, within our franchise. This is also in line with IBDC's vision as our motto, which says distributing power, changing lives. You know, this is part of our way of changing lives, as it is currently evident in Mokolokee. The town now enjoys regularity of supply, which is attracting indigenes, you know, back home to invest. Mokolokee falls under the underserved category of communities within our franchise, which means that they experience limited house of supply from the main grid, or they used to experience limited house of supply from the main grid. And all the customers, majority of the customers, you know, were unmetered just before the mini grid system, you know, came into play. Some of the most difficult challenge that we had, you know, was getting the communities buying into the project. Like I mentioned earlier, the underserved community who are largely unmetered. So bringing a new system with, you know, that promised the reliability of supply with all the customers, you know, metered was a big challenge, and we're able to overcome those challenges. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Toby. And definitely in working with you and the IBDC team, it was evident how forward thinking you all are on all of this. So it was a pleasure. I'd like to jump over to Anayo at NIOTECH. So NIOTECH, as I mentioned earlier, was the developer on this project. And Anayo, you were obviously involved in this from very early on as well. There was a lot of negotiation in, you know, in a very positive sense, but there were a lot of details to work out with this project. So obviously that makes it a little bit more complicated than your typical off-grid project. Could you say a little bit from the NIOTECH perspective of why this business model and this project was interesting to you, and, you know, based on the experience so far, whether this is something that you would want to do again?
Thank you, James. It's my pleasure being here at this event. NIO Tropical Technologies has been in the forefront of renewable energy here in Nigeria and West Africa for over 20 years. So exploring a new business opportunity like the interconnected on-grid project presented itself as a first mover opportunity, both as a business learning opportunity, a business opportunity, and also an impact opportunity. So this was the main attraction, you know, looking at the overall energy situation in Africa and Nigeria in particular. So we found out that captive power, embedded power, And again, above all, clean energy, renewable energy is a very important component in accelerating access to energy here in Nigeria. So that was the initial catch. That was the initial, attraction to going to undergrid power. Talking about the negotiations, it was quite interesting to find ourselves in such a situation where you have to talk to customers who are used to, not paying for power, and also used to not having power at the same time. So, but we found there's a connection within the two, which is like a chicken and egg thing. They want power, they can't pay for it, or they cannot afford to pay for it. And also, we're opportune to have a DISCO who find this an opportunity to, they see like from a social impact point of view, and also a business opportunity to scale their operations. And, you know, so it was a kind of a convergence of opportunities for all stakeholders. So we're happy, and the rest is now story 1 year down the line.
Great, thanks, Anoya. And in a minute, it would be great to dig in a little bit more to, you know, kind of that convergence of these different factors that you talked about. But before we get into that, I'd like to turn to Albert Butari. So Albert, you work across Sub-Saharan Africa. As I understand it, you're currently in Addis Ababa, and you've just finished work in Lesotho. So I'm curious, you know, from your perspective in working across all these different countries, what was the first thing that struck you when you heard about this project in Nigeria? And what aspects are, you know, really most exciting or intriguing from your perspective?
Well, thank you, James, and thank you, everybody, for finding time to participate in this important discussion. So, yes, I'm Albert Butari. In fact, I'm in Addis Ababa only for a week. I'm facilitating high-level preparation for what is called a COP, Conference of Parties on Climate Change, that in preparation of this upcoming COP that is going to take place in Scotland end of this year, should the COVID situation ease a little bit. So I'm here to facilitate and advise them on the preparation of their position to the negotiations. But otherwise, I'm still based in Lesotho. I'm advising the government of Lesotho on energy sector reform. Otherwise, my company, the African Initiatives Group, is based, is headquartered in Rwanda, where I come from, and it has a branch in Nairobi and also in Lesotho, especially focusing on climate change matters. I also happen to be the former Minister of Energy in Rwanda. So to the question, I mean, I've seen it almost all on different business models of mini grids, and this struck me and intrigued me, this as an innovative idea and the courage to, especially for the developer, to approach the big grid operator for this kind of partnership, and both trying to converge their thinking and be able to come up with this synergy, which is successful. Number two is the trust and readiness of the grid operator, of small grid operator to allow, the main grid operator to allow the developer an undergrid, mini grid development and use his network. In other words, cooperating instead of competing, which is not typical. And the third is the commitment of the grid operator, I mean the main grid operator, to ensure that community is well served despite loss of revenues in my view. Probably here there is something I'm missing, which also forms up a question to both of them on how the trading goes about in both networks.
Thanks, Albert. That's great. And that question about trading is definitely something we can come back to. Before we get there though, I'd like to turn over to David Raposo from USAID. So David, you work on energy access at USAID and have a long history of working with USTDA and others as well. So I'm curious from your perspective, working on this across geographies, again, what really stood out to you about this project and what seems maybe different about it from other business models that you've seen in other contexts, and you know, what could be most exciting about it?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to contribute to the conversation, James. And thanks also to the Inlet team and also to ESI. Africa, really a privilege to be part of this conversation today. By way of introduction, so I'm working in energy access, and today I'm representing Power Africa, which is a USAID, so US Agency for International Development led public-private partnership comprised of about 150 private businesses, many development partners, so bilateral nations, and other parties who are joined in ambition to deliver new megawatts of capacity to African power systems, and also germane to this conversation to create new connections. And I have what I consider to be the privilege of focusing on energy access issues. So in terms of this project, it was really compelling on a couple of levels that I would like to dive into. First, just at a very basic level, it was great to see the impact that this project had in facilitating business creation and creating the conditions for economic opportunity. James, there was some press that was developed by RMI regarding this project that I reviewed shortly before this call, wherein it was referenced that a health clinic, a bakery, a metal workshop, several other businesses were able to stand up as a consequence of access to reliable power, which is always so validating for us to see, because we've been invested in these spaces since 2013, since Power Africa was founded, and it's nice to see that validation of our investment hypothesis. And similarly, I was compelled by the way that new businesses seem to be attracted to the village as a consequence of access to reliable power. It really speaks to the ability of reliable power access to serve as an engine of economic growth. But deeper than that, sort of beyond just the validation of energy access as kind of a precondition for economic activity, I was compelled by this model in particular, and this underscores the points that Anayo made a moment ago, where this particular model seemed to thread the needle between the needs of the distribution utility and the needs of the private utility. Two parties who share very similar ambitions, very similar business models, but in so many markets find themselves at loggerheads. This model seemed to provide a methodology by which not just those two parties could benefit, but significantly, and perhaps most significantly, the ratepayers in the village in question, they could benefit as well. So I was perhaps most compelled by that facet of what I learned. And to me, it begged questions about replicability, about scalability. And I'm hopeful that that's where the conversation can turn next. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, David. Yeah, let's get into that. The relationship part that you mentioned, I think, is so critical here. We should also come back to the economic development angle as well, as you mentioned. That is obviously been very gratifying to see how that has worked out in practice, as you said. So kind of taking the theory and seeing how it worked. So I know Anayo and Toby can both speak to that as well. But let's start with the relationship aspect. Anayo, coming back to you, you know, I think as David just put it, there's a tendency, you know, within the industry and in other geographies for utilities and private developers to meet at loggerheads, as David said. How did you get around that? What did you find was important in creating a working relationship with Toby and the IBDC team? And just say a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's very interesting, like I said earlier on, to have an opportunity to meet the DISCO with a kind of open mind to that collaboration, you know, the possibility of that collaboration happening. First, they appreciated it from two views. One is a social impact on the side of the customers. Two, they also saw it from a business opportunity. You know, you see, if we're losing power on this distribution network, if this technology or this business activity can turn losses to profit in one way or the other. So it was a pilot, as it were, just to test one, the social engineering, that's the social part. The other part is the commercials, like the business profitability of such a transaction. Then thirdly, the technology to see how typical remote mini grid system interface, with the grid in an embedded environment. So these are the three tracks we took. So IBEDC found this interesting enough. We'll put our proposals on the table. We're open to it. We had a couple meetings, which RMI most times, got involved in the, midwife in this transaction, both at the tripartite level and also with the regulator, the NEC, which was another level of, getting this, from a concept to fruition, So, it's interesting to see how all parties, pass through the process of the initial engagement of selling the ideas to construction stage and operating and maintaining this for well over 13 months at this moment. For us, we saw it as a first mover opportunity into something we feel that is profitable. In fact, I must tell you that at the moment we are discussing over 20 megawatts, if I check, of similar projects with IBEDC, because the pilot is going on well, and the relationship is good to scale. So it means the technology works, the financial viability is good, and all parties, including the communities, the off-takers, are happy with it. So we're looking at scaling this opportunity. So that's one good news I want to break here. And again, there have been a lot of interest from other discos, distribution companies around Nigeria, trying to replicate the same model. We have signed off a couple projects with Abuja Electricity Distribution Company. We're also talking to two other discos around Nigeria. And we've had interest from all other parts of Africa, not just Nigeria, because if you look around Africa, for obvious reasons, there are about 50 to 60% of the populations in Africa live in the fringes of the city, not in the rural areas or in the city center. So this is where the small businesses thrive. And this is also where a lot of the population live, in the slums or the underserved peri-urban locations. While in the rural last mile, you see very small hamlets and very, scanty buildings that might not be viable for a standard mini-grid developer to set up business. Or for obvious reasons, one is accessibility, two is densification to meet capacity utilization. But the under-grid opportunity in the peri-urban area have always been an opportunity we as a company has always had interest in. So coming back to the relationship, over the past 1 year, we've tested the technicality of the relationship, that's the handshake of the technology. We've tested the financial viability, and we also tested the social impact and social response from the off-takers. Who seems to be scoring well over 100% above our expectation. So that's why I say we've already gone far in our scaling up discussions with IBEDC. I'm happy to announce that here. And also spreading out this across Nigeria, and not just Nigeria, across the borders to other African countries where inquiries have been coming from, to understand the model and the potentials and the, what it took to get this project to fruition.
And Toby, maybe you could build on that. I remember a conversation that we had with you and the executive team at IBEDC very early on, in thinking about the scalability aspect and, kind of what conceivably could make sense for IBEDC to do in these types of rural communities where supply is currently been a really tough challenge and there are some major infrastructure barriers. Could you say a little bit about how, from a utility or a disco perspective, you see, what are the important things that you need developers to understand from your perspective in thinking about a business model like this, and particularly as we, as Anaya said, start to see more and more opportunities for scaling and replication, what do the other sides need to be aware of from a DISCO perspective?
Okay, thank you, James, and Anaya for the insights. You'll agree with me that when the Nigerian electricity supply industry was unbundled in 2013, the aim was to increase energy access across, or electricity access across Nigeria. But 8 years down the line, or about 5 to 6 years down the line, we noticed that our overdependence on the main grid might not get us where we want to be. So now we're looking at off-grid solutions, part of which the solar mini-grid systems, one of, especially for underserved remote and rural areas within our franchise. If you could recall, when your management, the RMI management visited a couple of years back, the management of IBDC reiterated their commitment to deploying solutions geared towards, you know, increasing availability of supply to underserved areas within our franchise. We've not reneged on that promise. We're waxing stronger. We're working with developers such as Nayotech to close that demand gap. And hopefully in the nearest future, we believe that we'll have, you know, sufficient solutions to bridge that gap. The huge gap, the gap is so huge, but we really need to quickly, you know, find solutions to some of these things. And the only way we can, because we really do not know when the reliability of the main grid will arrive. So the best stopgap solution for now is to get off-grid solutions that will meet these demands.
Great, thank you, Toby. And just want to give a quick reminder to our audience today that you can submit questions using the chat function on the right side of your screen. So those would be great to get in now and as we're going through the conversation, and then we can dig into them during the Q&A in a little bit. But with that, David, I'd love to turn back to you. So, you know, from your, again, perspective with Power Africa and the USAID program, you obviously see what's going on in across a number of different countries in Africa. And, you know, I think some of the interesting dynamics at play in the Mokoloki community and with this business model could be replicable elsewhere. As Anaya said, he's already received a lot of interest from other geographies. So things like rural communities where the power supply exists but is relatively poor, where customers are using backup generation. So in the case of Mokoloki, a lot of diesel and petrol gensets, and where the utility has kind of a motivation from a revenue perspective to engage in a new business model. Do you see opportunities where that could be replicated elsewhere in Africa?
Certainly there are opportunities that resemble Mokoloki from a technical perspective, right? So maybe it's a village at the end of a medium voltage feeder, right, where the electricity supply is subject to voltage irregularities as a consequence, right, of just being a great distance from a generation source. And perhaps there is, you know, a comparable quantity of villages out there, communities out there that have distribution utilities that are similarly motivated to find least cost kind of win-win solutions, like Toby and Anayo have described. But I think what is really going to drive this is the enabling environment, so the policy and regulatory environment that has made all of this possible. I think there's a growing recognition out there of the utility, let's say, so the usefulness of these kinds of solutions to deliver energy access, where either private utilities or centralized distribution utilities are unable to act alone due to a diversity of factors. But it's going to take an enabling environment like the one that Nigeria has created to see this through. So to take those opportunities and actualize them. So I think that we would see these kinds of opportunities first in other Nigerian marketplaces. So you referenced in your brief introduction of me that before I came to Power Africa, I worked with another government agency called the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, or USTDA. That's a great outfit that I encourage other infrastructure developers who may be listening into this conversation to check out. They provide project preparation grants for infrastructure developers of all kinds. And they are uniquely, these days, interested in off-grid energy markets. And before I left USTDA, one of the projects that I worked on, that I was most compelled by, was with a Nigerian firm that's engaged with the DISCO in Kaduna, Kaduna State. And this firm is called Kinexa. They're implementing, as many of you may know, perhaps all of you know, fellow panelists know, they consider themselves to be a kind of utility of the future that is implementing undergrid mini-grids, where that can be the lowest cost energy delivery solution. They're implementing solar home systems, where that can be the lowest cost energy delivery solution to unelectrified customers. And they're engaging with IPPs, wheeling power into new distribution territories, where that can be the lowest cost solution. You see these kinds of opportunities emerging uniquely in Nigeria, I think, because of the enabling environment that's been created. And so I really applaud the government of Nigeria. So that's the, of course, the ministry, REIA, and all of the implementers along the way. So the adventurous distribution utilities that have used this enabling environment to really pilot some novel activities like the one that we're discussing today through the development lifecycle all the way to fruition.
Thanks, David. That's a great point about the enabling environment, definitely. And I think you mentioned a number of agencies. I would also throw in the Nigerian regulator, NERC, as well, who has done a great job of making the mini-grid regulation that exists in Nigeria available, clear, well understood. And, you know, as we can talk about in a little bit, we're definitely engaged in the process here with the Mokoloki pilot to figure out some of those nuances. Before we get into that, though, Albert, I'd love to turn back to you. So this particular business model exists in a situation where, you know, there is a national grid connection, but for a variety of reasons, that grid, both at the bulk level and the distribution level, weren't able to meet the community's demand. So again, from your perspective across Africa, can you see that as something that could be replicated? Maybe given the enabling environment that David mentioned, or are there areas where it could happen if the enabling environment were to be created?
So thanks, James. Can the system be replicated elsewhere? Yes, indeed. This will particularly happen under the following situations. Where indeed the grid exists, but operates unreliably, and therefore won't serve especially business and economic to flourish predictably, or where there is the existence of consumers with sensitive activities that require power supply reliability. And I think they have referred to cases in the Mokoloki village clinics, for example, data control centers, communication towers, server rooms, such kind of consumers. So they all require reliable power supply. So where there is existence of anchor clients, for example, mining, timber mills, big businesses, street lighting, etc., these will ensure reliable business planning rather than depending entirely on the willingness to pay households whose income fluctuates depending on different factors, unreliable agricultural harvest, for example, etc. And then obviously, building on what David says, existence of open and flexible policy that allow this kind of model to be enforced. And with these conditions met, then a number of other countries, I mean, I can mention a lot, but just to mention a few, Zambia, Liberia, Sierra Leone, even South Africa, which was mentioned at the introductory notes, where you have real power cuts and load shedding. So these definitely, these countries understanding this model would jump on it immediately. But concluding this, I would wish again to hear from Anayo and Toby on how the kind of trading when you convert the two of you, how does it happen? My understanding is many of the clients there were originally or are still connected to the utility grid, but the supply is unreliable completely. And then comes in Anayo and he generates, but also upgrades the grid to avoid losses and to ensure that there is efficient transportation of electricity. How do revenues amongst the both of you work out? Or is it that, Toby, you said, okay, sure, we are there, but we are not serving the people. So Anayo, thank you very much for coming forward. And you see, invest in generation, backup generation, and move on reliably. And when your power supply comes in, then it's a question of like not indeed willing, because see, the network was there, was yours, but what Anayo did is to make sure that he reinforces it, his strength is to make sure it he avoids, he minimizes losses and so on. How do you go about that?
Yeah, Toby, do you maybe want to start with that? You know, I think as we had talked about it originally, there was sort of a cost reduction side in terms of reducing losses from an IBDC perspective, and also a revenue side with the usage fee. So do you want to say a little bit about how that works contractually?
Just a second, Toby. Also, I saw somewhere indication of reduction of tariff with the incoming of Anayo. So how did it work out for the tariff to go lower when I see further investments?
Okay, so let me start from the last question. Thank you, Albert, for the question. The reduction in tariff was, you know, we had the comparison with the costs at which the consumers generate the tariff, you know, because there's a tariff at which they generate using diesel, alternative sources, diesel and petrol, which were way higher than, of course, what the grid was offering and what the main grid developer offered. So there's a cost reduction in that sense compared to what the main developer is offering at the moment and what those consumers, you know, used to generate electricity using diesel and petrol engines in the past. So going back to your initial question, just like James mentioned earlier, the regulator NERC had already provided a very, very good framework for the developer, the community, and the DISCO, you know, to play on. So it made it a lot easier for us, you know, to engage the developer and agree on the terms. It was quite easy for us, just like the part of the reasons why we had, you know, the developer go into those communities. Number one is for cost reduction. Number two, we're also not performing well in terms of supply of electricity to these consumers. And we felt if we have a developer coming, of course, he's going to look at how he's, you know, how he will secure his investment. He needed to reduce losses, so invested in improving the distribution infrastructure. They had to meter all those customers. I mentioned earlier that none of those customers were metered. Now I had to meter all those customers to ensure that his commercial losses and collection losses were reduced to the barest minimum. So it was a win-win situation for us all. For IBDC, for instance, number one, you're already creating a culture, because with the metering, you're already creating a culture of prompt payment for electricity usage. For us as well, we'll be having an improved and standard electricity distribution network. Then we'll also be making some money, because in the regulation, we will have provision for a distribution use of asset fee. So that's a charge that the developer pays to the DISCO for the use of his assets over the period of, you know, of the engagement. So IBDC together with Niotek agreed on a fixed charge. So we're also allowed to charge either a fixed charge or a charge based on the performance of the system. So but IBDC for this pilot scheme opted to go for the fixed charge. So we have a fixed duos that the developer, Niotek, is paying IBDC for services rendered to communities, to members of Mokoloki community. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that's great, Toby. I was just going to say, Anayo, do you want to add to that from your perspective on kind of how the money side works?
Yeah, first of all, we have to push the big elephant in the room, which is how would customers, in the sense of saying that they are paying less after, installing the mini grid. Like what Toby said, the blended cost of electricity for there's the baseline for the customers was well over 50 to 60 cents per kilowatt. And when we arrived, as we're looking at the cost of using diesel or petrol, and then to bridge the gap within the DISCO availability, and then but still they still don't get up to 24 hours electricity we are offering at the moment. And looking at that blended cost, we didn't capture the cost of acquisition of these machines at the generator and the risk of keeping petrol in your backyard. And we've come in to bring all that, bring a solution that takes away all that stress from the community. So the blended cost of power in this community was about 56 cents, while we offered very much less than that. So that's why that confusion about we're not comparing to baseline grid power cost, but rather we're comparing with the blended costs, as it were at the site. Having said that, like Toby also said, we agreed on a two-track approach on the payment. One is the dues we pay for use of their existing assets and also taking over their customers. The other is the second stream of revenue is from electricity. When finally the electricity from the DISCO becomes available, we will redistribute this electricity in an efficient manner and have a single point of metering at the substation, which is more efficient than going about 350 households to collect your electricity bills. Right now, we have smart meters installed at 350 households. We have the customer information. We collect money efficiently. We have a local agent within the community that does vending and pays prepaid. So now it's very easy. We are sure we're having over 97% or more revenue collection rate, which is a unicorn in the industry. And we've been able to achieve a very high efficient network. The upgrade we did, so we're having very less technical losses. Thirdly, we've upgraded the network ready for availability when the upgrade and the servicing of the feeder is complete. We expect to have more reliable power on that feeder from the DISCO, so we will buy power in bulk and redistribute within the network and have a single meter facing with the DISCO, which is more convenient for the DISCO, and increase their revenue collection efficiency. So this is part of the value proposition, value we're bringing into this transaction. Apart from that, we have a fixed deals, which is like a royalty we pay annually for taking over the customers and also the assets, distribution assets we met on the ground.
That's great, Anayo. And this is, really getting at the kind of heart of this agreement. So, Albert, thanks for teeing up this question.
So, Toby, curiosity, are you generating a bit of more revenues from the fixed costs, under the understanding you have, compared to what you irregularly generated before under the I don't want to hear responsible about an unreliable network power supply before Anayo came on board?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Albert. I mentioned earlier that it is a win-win situation for the stakeholders involved. IBDC, as a business concern, would not sign off any agreement that would be to the detriment of the company. So, of course, the revenue stream from Mokoloki at the moment is started higher than what we used to make in the past. But looking beyond that, we've also cut our losses. Now we don't have to expend on O&M costs, you know, to the community to share bills. For instance, you know, we really do not have to clear any faults in those communities, for instance, because the developer is not fully in charge. So the operational costs that we incurred initially, albeit the inadequate supply and the shortfall in revenue, all those are now gone. And in addition to that, we're still making money from the business venture. And the way we arrived at that was that we had a depreciation on the assets that we have on the ground, which the developer would utilize. We also had a minimum revenue requirement looked into. So this put together, you know, informed our position on the fee that we charge the developer. So I was going to say that overall, what the revenue we're actually making from this venture is higher than what we used to make from that community in time past.
Great, thanks, Jovi. And I just wanted to bring that Duos and the distribution usage fee part back to connect with the relationship aspect that we were discussing earlier. You know, I think from being part of those conversations, that was really one of the more challenging questions to figure out is what's the methodology for calculating that usage fee? And Toby and Anayo, I know we went through a lot of different iterations on that. And one of the observations for me and, you know, from the RMI vantage point was how open that conversation was between the developer and between IBDC, and really both sides bringing an understanding of, you know, from Anayo, from your perspective, understanding that IBDC ultimately needs to come out ahead on this as well. So they have to have their part of the win-win scenario. And Toby, from your perspective, understanding that, you know, if that usage fee is too high, it's going to result in unnecessarily high tariffs for the customers. And so trying to find that right balance of cost reflective, but not overly burdensome. So I don't know if either of you want to say anything on that, but at least from an RMI perspective, that was one of the really interesting things and an important relationship aspect that stood out to me.
If Anayo and Toby don't have anything to contribute right at this moment, I'd like to just quickly offer that we observe that phenomenon at play in sort of different disguises all over the continent. I was thinking in particular, Toby, as you were describing the negotiation of fees to access the distribution system. What we've observed now for years in South African municipal distribution system, which have long queues of IPPs, essentially, that want to engage on the commercial and industrial side, and then have willing customers, some of whom have PPAs in place with IPPs. But the distribution utilities in these cases so far have been unable to negotiate what they consider wheeling charges, like a wheeling tariff that would enable an IPP to access distribution utilities network infrastructure in a manner that would make everyone whole. When I heard you describe the situation, the negotiation that took place with Niotech, I heard a negotiation that yielded a result that led to everyone feeling like they were made whole as a consequence. And I think that's what all parties are always after in such a negotiation. So, you know, once again, I really do take my hat off to the two of you, but to this marketplace more generally for accomplishing something where other African markets have tried to engage, but so far have been unsuccessful.
Yeah, thanks for that, David. And maybe that's a great pivot point in that. Just do a quick time check on where we're at. I think we've got about 15 minutes left, so probably can ask another question or two here and then give everyone a chance to wrap up their thoughts. But David, maybe we could start with you and, you know, kind of building on what you were just saying about that South African experience, which is a great kind of another example to think about in this vein. What is there any work that Power Africa is doing, any research or projects that you're supporting on this topic, and maybe that start to touch on some of those relationship development or addressing some of the roadblocks to, you know, whether it's undergrid mini grids or IPPs or, you know, other commercial and industrial setups? Just generally, how are you thinking about this from a Power Africa perspective?
Yeah, we do a lot of thinking about this from a lot of different perspectives. So Power Africa is set up such that we have advisors in many markets who are, you know, in many cases embedded with distribution utilities, embedded with regulators and policymakers, guiding the development of policy, sometimes sort of midwifing the policy all the way to its final form. We played a big hand in helping to develop the mini-grid policy for Côte d'Ivoire, for example. But through a large contract vehicle we have in place called the Power Africa Off-Grid Project, we're engaged in markets all over the continent and conducting this kind of work. Germane to this conversation, I think of most interest to the, you know, all of us in this conversation, one thing that we've observed, maybe like a thread that is running through a lot of the markets in which we're active, is that, and this is quite contrary to the, you know, productive conversation that we're having here, we're seeing regulators and more perhaps even policymakers engage in the redrawing of the boundaries between the off-grid and the grid. So it's an assertion by a central government or a central, you know, transmission or distribution authority that service territory belongs to them. That even though they may be in a financially distressed position as a you know a utility that is unable to recover their costs and to cover their debt, they insist on having the exclusive rights to develop into rural areas that, from a distance, from the perspective of donors and other parties, it really seems like a private party, you know, with a business model like Niotech, for example, might be better suited to implement. We see that as a kind of near-term and maybe long-term threat to the goal that we have of something like universal electrification, right? Which is all the more reason why I'm excited to see this kind of budding collaboration between distribution utilities and private utilities in Nigeria, and why I'm hopeful that others can see this model, which the two of you seem to regard as mutually beneficial, and learn from it and come to more mutual understandings where all parties can be made to feel whole and that new customers can be electrified cost efficiently.
That's excellent and really great that Power Africa has, you know, kind of dove into this from a number of different angles, as you mentioned, and the Power Africa Off-Grid Project is certainly doing tremendous work. Albert, I'm curious, you know, you and your work in Rwanda, but maybe also the work that you're doing in Addis right now related to the COP, are you seeing some of these trends that David just mentioned around policymakers redrawing territories, or are you, you know, kind of how are you seeing that national grid and policy driven electrification approach play out with something that could be open to business models like this that are maybe more private sector driven, or at least utility enabled and allowing the private sector to play a role in meeting those goals?
So I think building on what David just said, so I able to really unfold the acceptance and coming on board of the policymakers and also regulatory framework to embrace this, that will be great. Because normally we all know there is kind of business mutual suspicion between the utilities and mini grids, not perspectives. And they are kind of really convergence and the marrying of IBDC and Niotech is really a model that will be propelled to be understood. However, it needs a kind of strong advocacy. Obviously, low-hanging fruits shall be areas where there are such situations like kind of permanent load sheds and huge power losses from the countries I've been talking about. For example, Sierra Leone, we're talking about 38 plus losses, technical losses. I haven't talked about administrative and commercial losses. So these are really, these will come up as a solution to that. It will take a bit of time, you know, so it needs strong advocacy. And I see David here through Power Africa involvement, this subsector playing a role. I see Enlit along these discussion platforms to bring on board different players to understand the model. And on the side of Toby and Anel to kind of come up with a kind of expose. Obviously, it's not right now to our advantage, but also to a future potential clients as well, Anayo, to make sure that it's well understood. When you started, for example, when I was asking a question about the lowering of the tariff, I was simply comparing the tariff we agreed with vis-a-vis the tariff that the guys enjoyed from the utility grid, which was not the case because you're talking of other alternative sources that are expensive the consumers have been using. So if you elaborate that clearly, number one. Number two, also on the question of Toby, to make sure that I had thought you lose revenues actually, but instead you are gaining, you know, again, this is something that needs to come out very strongly so that it provides confidence to utilities to be able to come forward and partner up with developers and quite move on. So my submission here is really this is an innovative business model from all perspectives, technical, economic, but more so policy and regulatory, because it's indeed win-win for all the stakeholders.
Great, that's really helpful to hear, Albert. We're probably going to have time for everybody to do about, you know, a 1 minute takeaway from your session. We can go through that in just a second while everybody's thinking about, you know, what's your overall takeaway from this discussion. I'll just say from RMI's perspective and what we're working on this, you know, I think what you just highlighted, Albert, around the need for advocacy and building some of those relationships over time based on the example that we've seen here today and at Mokoloki, that's really where RMI is focusing our efforts, as well as on thinking about what are the additional business models that could be effective, particularly in Nigeria. So David mentioned the CNI example in South Africa. That's something that we're actively thinking about in Nigeria as well. Is there a way that that could work for CNI customers and distribution companies to work together, for example, as well as the Conexa example that you mentioned in that kind of sub-franchising type of arrangement? Where does that fit in on the spectrum of options? And, you know, how do some of those kind of more comprehensive or holistic types of solutions that take longer to implement, how do those fit alongside faster to implement and smaller scale projects like this one? So hopefully I've bought you all enough time to think about closing remark here. Let's go around the horn and we can just, on my screen, David, you're up first. So we'll go David, Albert, Toby, and then Anayo, if you could all just share a quick 1 minute reflection.
Maybe in lieu of a quick reflection, if I could just offer up something that I intended to share earlier, but the conversation sort of moved on. I'd really like to return to a point that Anayo made, which I thought was brilliant, about the blended cost of electricity before the mini grid arrived being north of 50 cents, 50 US cents per kilowatt hour. And that the new blended cost of the mini grid provided power was dramatically less. I think mini grids have a reputation of providing power at an expensive cost per unit, but expensive is quite relative. And especially so in this case, where if NIO was able to offer power at a quarter per kilowatt hour, in this case, that would be a 50% reduction for a ratepayer in Mokoloki. So that's great. And I think furthermore, that points to something pretty universal, that wherever the blended cost of electricity is transparent, wherever the cost reflectivity is evident to financial modelers who want to look at that market from a distance and evaluate whether to invest in it, I think that mini grids can make a lot of sense. I would just like to put that on the field as a potential precondition to scaling up the kinds of business models that we're talking about today. Cost reflectivity of tariffs. Thanks.
Perfect. Thanks, David. Albert?
Yeah, so I mean, let me build on that. Currently, we are working, my company, we're working for our FORS, Association of African Regulators, on mainstreaming mini grid tariff settlement tools and methodologies across sub-Saharan Africa regulators. Now, we are looking at all business models, and without this, and I was wondering whether Anayo, Toby, you'd be keen to kind of share information on the tariff modeling so that it's something that could be propelled and be considered, because indeed cost reflectivity of the mean grids is something that is still, you consider it completely different. And could you come up with a different perspective right now? I think it's something that will be very, very useful. So I wonder whether you would be keen and willing to share on the modeling you followed in establishing the tariff to see whether it's something that could be replicated in different environments.
Great, thanks, Albert. Toby, we'll go to you.
Okay, well, thank you, Albert and James. Well, of course, myself and Nayo would be willing to help in building the model, and also be happy to provide necessary information needed to make sure that you have something workable, you know, at the end of it. So going to my closing remarks, well, there's no gain saying that the future of stable electricity supply in Nigeria and in sub-Saharan Africa can only be achieved, you know, by the decentralization of the main grid, by the development of you know, mini grids in underserved and unserved areas across the country and across the region. This will go a long way in closing the huge gap, you know, between demand and supply of electricity, you know, and also improve the reliability of supply in these areas. Within IBDC, we'll have a number of areas where this initiative, you know, can be replicated. Of all the discos, IBDC has one of the best, you know, places to keep mini grids. Affordability is the second priority, and not the biggest, you know, for us. People can afford to pay for essential services. For instance, many people, you know, initially used to pay very high, you know, tariff for to telecoms companies, but eventually those costs came down. But, you know, as an essential service, people, we notice that people are willing to pay as high as possible for reliable service. Also, it is also important to look at the economic indices of areas where the mini grids will be sited. But on the other hand, electricity is the engine room for progress. It is the basis for industrialization. So we expect that when these mini grids are developed, there would be an economic boost in host communities and in Nigeria at large. So thank you once again for this opportunity to showcase our flagship project, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Toby. And now over to you for a 1 minute closer.
Thank you. Thank you, James. Thank you, everyone. The event has been an insightful one to share experience and also to learn, you know. For me, my parting words, I think the market is ripe, the technology is ripe, and the enabling regulatory environment is also good, at least for here in Nigeria at the moment. What is lacking is the required investment, private and public investment in this space to scale this wonderful opportunity. Like David said, reliable data like this should be, you know, gathered and put in front of investors, business concerns, and regulators, so to help guide, you know, would-be investors or policymakers in this direction. So for us, it's an interesting time for a company to be in this space, you know, doing what we're doing right now. So I thank you all, and I look forward to more engagements like this.
Thank you, Nayo. Thanks, everybody, for this great conversation. I really couldn't sum it up any better. I think Nayo call to investors and to policymakers to keep an open mind and get involved here. Toby, your point about bringing distribution companies and utilities into the loop. Albert, great to see a real-time partnership opportunity to do that and to replicate some of those results internationally come up here on the call. And David, your point about the economics and the importance of comparing business as usual to what these solutions can provide and making sure that that's to the advantage of community members. All great points. You know, I think this kind of conversation is what we need more of. So thanks again to the organizers for bringing us together.